Okay, well, I guess we get started then. So, thank you very much, Mike Mason, for joining us today to talk a little bit about your role in Chaosium and Call of Cthulhu and all those good things.
My pleasure to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Welcome. I know we've got a lot of people around the globe who are very interested in what's happened to Chaosium over the last couple of years, as well as what's going to happen soon. So, but before we start getting into the meat of it, why don't you tell us, please, who is Mike Mason and how did you get into gaming?
Yeah, sure. I'm Mike Mason, and I work for Chaosium, where I'm the Call of Cthulhu line editor. Previous to that, I previously worked as the Black Industries manager and co-author of Dark Heresy, the Warhammer 40,000 role-playing game, Dark Heresy. And prior to that, I did a Call of Cthulhu fanzine called The Whisperer, and used to organise lots of convention games, lots of Call of Cthulhu convention games around the UK and some in Europe through an organisation I set up called the Cult of Keepers. And then before that, I was like everyone else, a regular gamer, and I got into role playing probably around about 1980, yeah, let me think, about 1980, yeah, about 1980, 81 was about the time I think I very first played, and was pretty much hooked from there on in, to be honest. I kind of go full circle back up to date. At Chaosium, I'm the co-author of the latest edition of Call of Cthulhu, and lead writer of things like Pulp Cthulhu, and I kind of work on every Call of Cthulhu book that comes out. Even if I'm not the main writer, I'm the editor and also the line editor, so I have a hand on in terms of the direction of the line and what's coming out and commissioning, the books coming out in the future and that kind of thing. So that's what I get up to at the moment, I guess.
Fantastic.
Is that how? Yeah.
So, how did you get into actually writing stuff? I mean, obviously, you started off as a gamer. How did you get to actually publish your first work and get into where you are today?
I think most, I think the majority of people, certainly GMs, end up writing something even if they never never let another person see it. They, everyone kind of designs their own scenarios at some point, most of the time. I guess the difference is with me, I started to do that, and for a number of years it was just me playing my own scenarios as well as, running scenarios out of books and, adapting them. But then I started to attend gaming conventions, and I noticed that what I found was a lot of people at gaming conventions running scenarios out of books, rather than running something they'd written themselves or something that was written specifically for convention play. So I started to write, stuff specifically to run at a convention. I also met some guys who were kind of also ran Call of Cthulhu conventions, and we kind of got together. And because we're writing things specifically for conventions and specifically for Call of Cthulhu, people started to ask us, "Oh, will you publish these? Will you put them out?" And it was kind of like, "Well, we haven't really thought about it." And just the very fact of doing that started to, some of us were asked to put kind of scenarios into magazines, that kind of thing. This was kind of before the internet, really. So I mean, this is. In the UK, there was a magazine called Valkyrie Magazine, and a couple of us had scenarios kind of that we kind of originally had written for kind of convention play put into that magazine. And it kind of grew from there, really. the very fact that I was running Call of Cthulhu at different shows meant that I kind of started to kind of develop a relationship with Chaosium, because I was attending shows where Chaosium were attending, or somebody from Chaosium was attending. So kind of naturally kind of got together and chatted and that kind of thing. So I kind of then just kind of fell into a bit of freelance work with the company, in terms of doing a bit of editing, a bit of proofing work, mostly kind of, you know, not really being paid, just, you know, helping out really. It kind of snowballed from there. I mean, it wasn't like an overnight thing. It, you know, it's just, I'm talking like I'm condensing what is, you know, 10 years into a couple of sentences, to be honest. But, you know, over the course of time, you know, because I obviously had a day job as well, and, you know, in my free time I was either running stuff or writing stuff to run, and then it kind of like developed into doing a bit of editing, a bit of writing here and there, and then that was about the time that I actually started full-time at Games Workshop. And after a few years at Games Workshop, I kind of moved into a position in Games Workshop, which was, you know, responsible for the role-playing and board games line at Games Workshop that was under the imprint of Black Industries, part of the Black Library. And I mainly got that job because I had, you know, put out and edited and published a fanzine. So I had some kind of, well, as the chap who interviewed me and gave me that position said, well, you know, because you actually done a fanzine, I kind of understand that, one, you've got the gumption to do something, and two, you already understand some of the, you know, the processes of, you know, publishing effectively. You know, you've actually just gone and done it yourself. So that's, you know, that experience is kind of worth its weight in gold. So, which kind of stood me in good stead to kind of get a, you know, to get a full-time job as a game designer at Games Workshop, which was obviously a great experience. Yes, I mean, that kind of, you know, roundabout way is how I kind of got into it, really. I mean, there's no straightforward answer, to be honest, but that's kind of how it happened. doing stuff myself, and just in an amateur way, kind of got my name out there, got me some experience, and then that helped me to get into, you know, effectively freelance and then full-time game design work.
And so you now work full-time for Chaosium, and how long have you been with them?
I've been with them, we think, I think it's 4 years. 4 years. Come this year's Gen Con in August, it's about 4 years. Yeah.
Excellent.
4 years then, I think. Yeah.
And working so closely with Call of Cthulhu, reading the scenarios, playing the game, playtesting, how has that affected your sanity?
I think it had already long gone, to be honest. I've been playing Call of Cthulhu probably since about 1983. So
right at the beginning.
Prior to that, I've always been a fan of horror fiction, horror films. So I think, you know, that's whatever sanity I had has long since gone, really.
Fantastic. What would you say is your favourite Cthulhu work?
In terms of gaming?
Yeah, Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah? Okay. I think... let's have a think. Okay, I'll pick two. One's a kind of professional, one's an amateur one. The amateur one is one of my favourite all-time scenarios. Is one called You in Your Small Corner, written by an English chap called Andy Benison. It's never been professionally published, but it has appeared twice in fanzines. It appeared in Dagon magazine in the UK back in the 80s. And then, because it was one of my favourites, I actually put it into the Whisperer fanzine that I put out in the 90s, And the reason I like it so much is it's a short, very self-contained scenario, but it's the first scenario that I've really read that was a no-win scenario that sets you up, and there is no way you as a group of players can really find any sort of sense of resolution or win it. It's just a really hard choice. You whatever you do, you're going to fail, but there's certain, levels of choices you can make to, what level of failure you're going to succumb to. So that was one of the very first scenarios I read that was kind of written that way, and so it always stuck with me. So that's always been a favourite of mine. But in terms of published, it's probably Masters of the Aftertet because I had a lot of fun playing it and a lot of fun running it, and it's a classic in itself. Was really the first of its kind, and there's a lot of madness, deaths, fun, and laughter has been had by that campaign, over the years, really. So I think that's probably my all-time favorite, followed very, very, very closely by Horror in the Orient Express.
Oh yeah. So, talking of that, Horror on the Orient Express, obviously had a big republish through the Kickstarter. Is there a plan to do the same for Masks?
We certainly will come round to refreshing Masks in terms of one, bringing it up to date in terms of the mechanics, in terms of bringing it in line with the latest edition of Call of Cthulhu 7th Edition, and it's also showing its age a little bit in terms of some of the narrative plot, and so I think it could be a bit of a wash in a brush its hair, and just to sort of refresh it a little bit without dramatically changing it, just to kind of because it's written over 30 years old, and obviously role playing has changed in that time, let alone anything else. And so there's a little bit of sprinkling of modernity on it would probably help for new games masters coming to run it these days, who may not be so au fait with some of the arcane 1980s level of play that we used to do. We will come round to refresh that in some way. Whether it's a Kickstarter or not is a entirely different thing. It may be a Kickstarter, but it may not be a Kickstarter. It will only be a Kickstarter if there is a good logical reason why it should be a Kickstarter. Otherwise, we can put it out as a really attractive product, because that's really where we're going with all of our Cthulhu line these days.
So, talking of Kickstarters, can you? I got to touch on it. Can you tell us what happened with the 7th edition Kickstarter, the Horror of the Orient Express Kickstarter, and then the doom and gloom that came to Chaosium as a result?
I think it's all pretty much out there already, to be honest, if people want to go and look it up. But I wasn't involved in the Orient Express Kickstarter. I kind of By the time I joined the company, that was done and dusted, and it was really a case of delivering the product. And 7th edition, equally, I wasn't working for the company when the Kickstarter was active. Again, I kind of joined soon after it had closed, when it needed to be delivered, and so they needed to bring me on to kind of have someone there to actually deliver the material and make sure somebody was overseeing it through on the on the design side. I think the easy short answer is, design wise, it was designed and delivered, and then it hit production, and that's where it hit some problems. Hit some problems in layout that the person who was originally was down to do some layout work, unfortunately, took much, much longer than was anticipated that they would take. And so that had to be all pulled back in house, and then effectively had to all be relaid out again, because the work wasn't really on a par with where it was needed to be. So there was a, production delay. And obviously in parallel to that, Kaizen was experiencing some issues in terms of financing, that obviously I'm not involved with myself, so I can't really comment on those. I think, if you go and look at the appropriate kind of forums and announcements from Kaizen over the period when Moon Design took it over, I think, they've been pretty upfront about saying, how the finances looked when Greg and Sandy Peterson sort of took the ownership of the company back, as it were. And so yeah, there was some production problems, there was obviously some financial issues, and which basically necessitated the two of the owners of the company taking a more active role again in the company, which is obviously Greg Stafford, the founder of Chaosium, and Sandy Peterson, obviously the original creator of Call of Cthulhu, coming in and helping to kind of restructure the company and bringing in Moon Design, who included people like Rick Mintz and Jeff Richard and Michael O'Brien and Neil, bringing effectively bringing in a new management team into the company. So,
And so we have
which was
the shiny new
so we got
Chaosium.
effectively a new Chaosium, effectively, yes. And it's been swimming and on a very, a good road and good trajectory ever since that moment, that change, really.
I got involved with running Call of Cthulhu, as I think I mentioned to you, that about 2 years ago when the or a little over 2 years ago when the problems hit, and the change that we've seen from outside, and the air of expectation, hope that's there is great. And certainly the products we've seen coming out, the production quality is astounding. It's really fantastic, including
That's
the new Pulp of Cthulhu, Pulp Cthulhu book, which is beautiful.
great. Well, I'm glad you like it. I think it is a thing of beauty. It's we had a it was it certainly took a lot of my time and attention to get it where it is now. And I'm glad that I'm glad that you think so, because it's it was a real pet project of mine, effectively, to really get it out, and get it out in a in an attractive and a useful useful way that hopefully meet all the different desires that people have placed on this book. Because I mean, we're talking a book that was originally announced over 10 years ago and then kind of disappeared into development hill. So a lot of people have kind of got expectations about what the book would be and what it would do for them and what it would contain. And so there's a lot of expectation to try and one live up to, and and deliver effectively a satisfying and practical and useful and inspiring role playing book, product. So I hope if we manage to achieve some of that, then I'll be very happy.
I think so. The what would you say are the biggest changes for people who don't know Pulp Cthulhu?
Well, basically, I think there's quite a number of over the years I've played with different people in different groups. I've heard of different groups playing, and I think some groups Pulp Cthulhu is kind of like how some groups play Call of Cthulhu anyway. And it's those are the groups who kind of want to play it a little bit more like an Indiana Jones film, where it's a little bit more kind of action orientated, where the characters are tougher, a little bit more resilient. I mean, as the classic in Call of Cthulhu is, you play Call of Cthulhu, you then you die and go mad, which is the kind of the stereotype of the game. It isn't quite true, but there is some truth within it. It's a, you know, Call of Cthulhu is a game about normal people finding themselves in extraordinary situations, and often not on the good end of that. So they are, you know, with the game's mechanic and the character generation, that, you know, they make normal people, and normal people, as we all know, are fairly frail. You know, they don't, it doesn't take many bullets to drop a person, or many, you know, sword thrusts. So unlike other role-playing games where, you know, you can don your armor and run around and attack dragons and, you know, stand at the end having, you know, defeated all the hordes, Call of Cthulhu isn't that game. You know, you're living in a, you know, a mirror of the real world, and are just as frail. Whereas in Pulp Cthulhu, the characters are just turned up a little bit. They're you know, they're just that bit more. They have a bit more kind of resource, a little bit more agency. They are tougher. They can go a little bit more kind of toe to toe with some of the kind of monsters you may meet in Call of Cthulhu, but still. Despite that, they may be a bit tougher. They still will kind of go mad. You know, the insanity of the alien, uncaring cosmos still affects pulp characters just as it would in Call of Cthulhu. So they're not kind of superheroes in that way. They're just you know, Indiana Jones is a great example. That, you know, they're kind of these, like Indiana Jones, it still deals with lots of problems and has to overcome them, but you know, just has a little bit more kind of resource and agency to do that. So Pulp is very much kind of, you know, geared up for that style of play where you can play them, you can play quite investigative games with Pulp Cthulhu, but equally you can play, you know, very gung-ho kind of action combat orientated epic kind of adventure as well. You can dial it up, and what we're trying to do with the Pulp book is to actually make it a toolkit so you can actually, you can choose the kind of level of pulpiness that you want in your games, whether you want it kind of, you know, really high-end pulp with you know, weird science and psychic powers and all that kind of stuff, or whether, you know, actually that's a bit too much for you and your group and you want to dial that back, you can do that because as I say, the kind of the mechanics in Pulp Cthulhu dovetail into the core mechanics of Call of Cthulhu, and you know, they're very easy to kind of dial things back and just use the stuff that's right for you. So you can effectively tailor Call of Cthulhu and Pulp Cthulhu to your group and your game. Because as we all know, everyone's game is slightly different. You know, everyone's looking for slightly different things. Having the kind of toolkit approach just allows you to kind of, you know, mess around and kind of find the right level of things for you. And that's kind of what I, you know, hope people are able to do with both Call of Cthulhu and with, you know, Pulp Cthulhu.
Yeah, sounds cool. The monsters, are they dialed back, or is it the same old monsters, just you get a tiny little bit better chance of surviving?
I mean, it's the same monsters. I mean, although in Pulp, you know, there are, you know, evil robots. You know, or you could have evil robots. You can have dinosaurs. You can have hybrid mythos creatures, stroke dinosaurs, as well as just all the usual kind of alien, you know, creatures from beyond that, you know, go into your kind of classic Call of Cthulhu. In terms of pulp investigators, we actually don't call them investigators, but we call them heroes because obviously you're playing a pulp game, so why wouldn't you be a hero?
Right.
Because they are tougher. They, you know, whereas a normal Call of Cthulhu investigator wouldn't really stand much of a chance against pretty much any mythos monster. You know, maybe if they've got a shotgun and they've got the surprise and, you know, they're well prepared and they're planned, they you know, they might kind of hold their own enough for them to get away perhaps, and maybe take the odd, you know, smaller kind of human sized creature down, like a fish man or a ghoul or that kind of thing. But as soon as you get above human size with Call of Cthulhu, then suddenly you're kind of exponentially finding these creatures. You aren't trying to kill the creature, you're trying to get away from them, or the best you can do is hopefully kind of maybe maybe trap them or magically dispel them. Whereas in Pulp Cthulhu, you can actually bring out some of these bigger creatures that would be total party kills in Call of Cthulhu, and actually you can actually have a, you know, a stand-up fight or a kind of an encounter with, you know, these bigger creatures. You know, I remember playtesting the Pulp rules, and we had a star spawn of Cthulhu, which are, you know, these massive, huge things that would just be completely just tread all over a classic Call of Cthulhu party. But, you know, with pulp heroes kind of, you know, attacking and, you know, having this kind of epic kind of scene with the thing, they could have, they kind of stood their own. You know, again, it wasn't, again, not a walk in the park, but they're able to kind of, you know, as a keeper, you're able to bring out some of these monsters that you just wouldn't ever dare really to do for your Call of Cthulhu group, and you can stick them into pulp games and not worry about it because you know, the players can stand up to them. They'll probably still die, but they'll have a lot of fun, you know, in doing that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, is there a plan? I know you've just released an adventure or a campaign for Pulp Cthulhu, the Two-Headed Serpent, which I'll ask you about in a little while. But is there a plan to actually release a whole line for Pulp Cthulhu, or is there a plan to make all releases kind of work with either, or what is the plan? Is there going to be two divergent lines of products, Pulp Cthulhu and Standard Cthulhu?
It's a funny old thing. I mean, because Pulp Cthulhu effectively, you know, just dovetails some additional rules onto Call of Cthulhu, you can, you know, it doesn't take a lot of work to kind of take any Call of Cthulhu scenario and run it in a pulp style, because a lot of it is about attitude and about how you present the scenario and play the scenario. So in one sense, you don't need a completely separate line. But equally, some scenarios don't fit pulp that well because they are highly investigative. They are a little bit more kind of gritty, and they're, you know, they're not meant to be kind of, you know, they're much harder to kind of play in that pulp vein. So in terms of going forwards, I think we kind of, it's a bit of everything, to be honest. You know, there will be certain scenarios or campaigns that are specifically written for pulp, and you know, they will be pulp Cthulhu, you know, labeled in that way. Certain things that actually could be a bit of both might be written for Call of Cthulhu, but then provide additional material that may be asides or boxes or a little appendix at the back to say, hey, if you want to use this from pulp, here's some things that we would suggest you do. Here's some ways you can enhance it. Here's some ways you can inject some more action into it. So you kind of have these kind of a little bit of both. And then you will have ones that just don't really fit Pulp Cthulhu at all. And they, you know, they will remain, you know, classic Call of Cthulhu. So I think what I'm trying to say is everything on its own merit, whatever's appropriate. So if it's appropriate to have a bit of pulp in a Call of Cthulhu book, then great. But it would be, you know, clearly identified, and so you can, you know, you don't have to use the pulp bit if you don't want to. If you do, it's easy to find and it's easy to use. You know, but there will also be, you know, dedicated pulp material that is, you know, specifically written for pulp and geared completely in that direction.
Great. Now, I said the Pulp Cthulhu is a beautiful piece of work. I've heard somewhere that this is going to be the new production standard for all books, so everything you release will be full color. Is that right?
Yeah, I think 99.9% of the time it will be. Yeah, I mean, where it's a standard, you know, 100 page, where we're talking 100 page plus book, which is, to be honest, most scenario collections and campaigns are going to be in that ballpark, you know, above, you know, 100. I think Two-Headed Serpent is 250 pages roughly, all of those books will be hardcover. All of those books will be full color throughout, and so what we've done is we've actually invested in a in the design of the books in terms of, you know, putting together a new kind of template for Call of Cthulhu books. So there's a common, you know, a common design template to them all, which is an attractive one. We're investing in more art and better quality art. So working with some really great artists, not only doing, you know, full color, full page art, but also where it's maybe monochrome art, you know, working through it's more detailed. We're working with, you know, a wider range of artists. And so the books, you know, work holistically to really kind of up the kind of production value of them all. So occasionally where we, you know, we will do, you know, the odd small, maybe one, a single scenario booklet, like Alone Against the Flames, which is a solo scenario, which wouldn't be hard, but because it's only, you know, it's only like 26 pages or so, that would still probably be a, you know, a softback, probably, you know, black and white grayscale. But there will be the exception to the rule, you know, and the, you know, once in a while we'll do a kind of a, you know, we just want to try something out and maybe do it in that way. But all the main range books will be full color hardbacks. Yeah.
Fantastic. And a thing that's very close to my heart, being an online gamer, PDFs are very important to me, but I love the physical books. So the news that PDFs will now be available free for purchasers of the physical books was great news for me.
Yes, yeah, I mean, it's something that I've been kind of arguing for some time. So I was really pleased when the Moon Design guys came in and kind of said, you know, we just want to do this as well, and we, you know, managed to find a way to do it. So yes, yeah, so you know, if you buy direct from Chaosium, and you buy the hard copy of the book, you will get the PDF copy for free. If you buy the PDF in advance of the hard copy, when the hard copy comes out, you'll get your PDF, the value of the PDF, discounted off the copy of the hard copy. So you can't kind of lose either way. It's all good. And equally, you know, we're part of the Bits and Mortar scheme now. So if you buy from your friendly local gaming store, make sure they're a member of Bits and Mortar, which means if you buy the hard copy there, then you also get the PDF for free. And again, if you buy through Drive-Thru, obviously you can get the PDF as well. So just trying to make that, you know, as accessible as possible for everyone.
Which is great news for me. I bought the Horror on the Orient Express physical and then bought again the PDF, and it hurt. But
yes, yeah, that was unfortunate. Yeah, unfortunately, one of those things I have little control over. But now at least, you know, those coming into it now, at least they won't have to go through that same level of pain. And my apologies for that.
No problem. So, the Two-Headed Serpent, what's that all about?
So this is the Pulp Cthulhu campaign. It's a brand new campaign specifically written for Pulp Cthulhu. It's written by my co-writer of the Call of Cthulhu 7th edition, Paul Fricker, as well as a couple of other friends of mine, Scott Dorwood and Matthew Sanderson. So, well, all three of those guys, if you're not aware, also do a regular Call of Cthulhu podcast called the Good Friends of Jackson Elias. So basically I approached him and said, look, I need, you know, I've got Pulp Cthulhu coming out. I haven't got time to really work on a campaign myself because I've still got all these hundreds of other one things I need to do. Would you go away and write me a campaign for Pulp Cthulhu? And they obviously jumped at the chance. And so what you have is, in a way, it's clearly a kind of inspired and a kind of a successor almost, or you know, the son of Masks of Nathotep in that sense, because it's a globe-trotting kind of epic campaign in nine chapters, nine locations, both on this earth and beyond it, that it draws you in. And it's also quite freeform, that, you know, you can actually, you know, go to different chapters at different times. It involves an ancient race of mythos entities that are, worming their way into the 1930s America, that you find that you are caught between, differing factions of differing kind of mythos agendas, as well as crime agendas, as well as political agendas. So that's all the kind of the backdrop, but effectively you're caught in the middle of all this, and you are thrust into some very exotic locations in a very kind of dynamic and action kind of driven kind of narrative. And hopefully at the end of it, you may have the chance to save the world. I played it all the way through as a player, and had a fantastic time. Really enjoyed it, and having edited it all now, and it was really good fun to edit as well, because it's nicely written, and very accessible for both, new people coming into Pulp Cthulhu, as well as, your kind of experienced kind of referees and GMs from role, whatever system they've done. They'll be able to pick it up and run it, pretty much blindfolded. But it's also nicely written that it actually handhelds, more novice GMs in that way as well. So hopefully, it will spur many a group to have a good time saving the Earth, or not,
Or
depending on
not.
how they go. Yes.
So, what else is in the pipeline? I know that a couple more products have just been released, and you must have a whole load of things coming up. Can you share with us any of that?
Sure. Yeah, well, recently we've just put out PDFs of a couple of books. One is obviously The Tyranid Serpent, and also the Grand Grimoire of Cthulhu Mythos Magic, which is a compendium of Call of Cthulhu magic spells, drawn from, 35 years of Call of Cthulhu supplements and scenarios and campaigns. They've never been gathered together in one place. The rule book has always been had a kind of a collection of spells, but that's been a minority in terms of the whole kind of swathe of publications over the 35 years. So what we've done is pulled, and it's not every single spell that's ever been published, but it's pretty much the majority of them. A good 85% or even 90% of spells published, all in one place, all revised, all updated to 7th edition, all kind of, where needed, expanded, developed, you've got all these spells in there. You've also got chapters about, about casting spells and magic and all that kind of stuff, as well as a few kind of monsters and things you might summon up with the spells. So it's very much a very, very practical resource, as well as a book of inspiration for many keepers who are thinking of designing their own scenarios, because obviously a lot of the spells in there actually is very, you read the spell and you kind of already, or you already start thinking, oh, this should form the basis of a scenario. I could do something with this. So it's an inspirational as well as a practical work. And both of those books have just come out in PDF through Chaosium, they're heading to print now. And so the hard copies of those books will be available, well, in time for the kind of the summer, really, in terms of the convention season, in the summer, hopefully, around about June time, hopefully. So that's what's out at the moment. And then following those, we've got a couple of really cool books that have been a little while in the coming. We've got Down Darker Trails, which is a Wild West, Old West Call of Cthulhu setting. So if you, it's basically the West Coast Gaslight. So if you like Call of Cthulhu by Gaslight, which is predominantly sort of set in England and London particularly, well, if you want to move out of London, then Down Darker Trails takes you to the Western United States, effectively, where you've got your cowboys, and you've got your Native American Indians, and European settlers, and a whole host of people, heading west in that sense. So that's a kind of setting with character generation for building those characters. There's got some, you can create classic Call of Cthulhu characters with it. You can also create pulp characters with it. It comes with scenarios, and it's the first book in a short series that's going to be set in the Old West. And what's really exciting is that it's a really cool book. It's really well written. It's full of great historical content and full of lots of really cool mythos content, and written by Kevin Ross, who is an old hand at Call of Cthulhu books, and has written some real classics in his time, including things like Escape from Innsmouth, which is a real classic in the Call of Cthulhu canon. So it's really good to have Kevin's work coming out again. So that'll be out. The PDF will be out first again. We're just actually getting the we've had all the maps in for it. So just saw the maps for it the other day, and we've got the art starting to come in for that as well now. In fact, I was looking at the cover art this week, and that's shaping up pretty well as well. And the other book we've got coming is The Tales of Sandy Peterson, which is a collection of scenarios that have been designed or were designed by Sandy Peterson, who's obviously the original creator of Call of Cthulhu. And these are scenarios that he has designed over the last 10 or so years that he has run. Only he has run at a few conventions. So what we did is myself and Sandy kind of got together. He basically, gave me some notes and then basically talked me through the scenarios. I then basically went away with his notes and what he had imparted to me, and then wrote them up into scenarios that would allow other people to play them, basically. So we've got a book of scenarios. They're all set in the modern day, which is cool. We've got scenarios set in Dallas. We've got a scenario set on an oil rig. Got a scenario set in the pharmaceutical industry. One in British Columbia, in the middle of nowhere, and also it also is the home for Where the Derelict Will Go. And the Derelict was the free RPG day scenario we released last year, but will form part of this book as well, in terms of it being the full color treatment with extra art and development there as well. So that's a really exciting book because it's the creator of Call of Cthulhu's scenarios coming out, that have never been seen before. So it's really kind of some treasures from the history in there. So that'll be coming out too. And then well, that's what's kind of immediately. And then, looking a bit further beyond, we've got, without going into any big details, we've got a we'll be looking at Call of Cthulhu by Gaslight again. We've got a campaign for Gaslight that's currently being written. We've got a surprise later this year that's connected to the Orient Express. There, I'm trying to think now. I've got a pulp campaign sitting on my hard drive that I need to get on with. And we've got some other kind of books on in kinds of the kind of in terms of the kind of secrets of, so some more setting books in terms of historical setting and modern setting. So places, we've got a book at the moment looking at Berlin in the 1920s and 30s, the kind of Weimar Republic era Berlin, which should be really fascinating, exciting, and other books like that down the line that are all in development at the moment. So I've got a load of work to do, basically, is the
I was about to
short
say
answer. I've got loads to do.
you sound like you're a busy man. Busy,
Yeah,
busy.
very much so. Very much so.
But it's
I was
good
looking.
fun, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have it any other way.
User joined your channel.
If I'm not, editing and working on what somebody else has written, then I'm writing something myself, and both are great to do. It's nice to be able to obviously, just be purely creative and write some, some new material. And it's equally nice to sort of, not have to kind of engage that part of the brain and engage the other part of the brain in terms of editing and working over somebody else, because somebody else's work, because it's great reading other people's work, you know, because you are seeing all these wonderful ideas and imagining how they're going to play, you know, around gaming tables around the world. And you know, that's a pretty cool thing to do. So you know, it's you know, a dream job in that sense.
Indeed. And you get to travel around to all the cons and get involved with the people.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, not all the cons, but certainly some of them. And that's always a highlight, really, because you know, you get you know, I get to meet people and build friendships, and you know, with the gaming community as well as you know, the professional community. And it's great to see people who start out as just, you know, normal gamers who start to do some amateur stuff, and then, you know, within a few years they're professional freelance writers or artists or whatever. So it's great to kind of, you know, be part of that process and help people and encourage the kind of the next generation of writers and artists, as well as, you know, as well as working with you know, the ones currently, you know, in that line of work. And it's also just great to be able to kind of play a game with a bunch of gamers I've never met before, but we all understand the same game. We all understand what we're here for and have a few hours of fun, you know, and have a great, you know, great game. And you know, so I do enjoy going to conventions. So I'll be at in the UK, I'll be at Games Expo in Birmingham in June, and then hopefully I'll be at Necronomicon in Providence, Rhode Island, America, in August, for the big kind of Cthulhu get together there. So they're my two big kind of events this year. But obviously I'm based in the UK, so I kind of get to much more of the UK kind of stuff than elsewhere. But you know, wherever I can, I try and support. Yeah.
Brilliant. So do you GM keeper more than you play, or is it a good spread?
I tend to GM more than I play. But it's really funny, actually. I actually do more playing now than I ever did before. When I wasn't working, you know, in terms of being the line editor for Call of Cthulhu, I pretty much GM'd or keepered games. Pretty much that's all I did. And now, because I like to playtest a lot of material we're developing, often, you know, if I'm not writing it, then I can be a player in the game and not know anything about it, and just, you know, enjoy it as a player. And so I'm actually playing more than I ever did, as well as keeping. So that's been a kind of a unexpected bonus. So I've actually, you know, as I say, you know, played all the way through the Two-Headed Serpent, and I'm in the middle of a playtest for another scenario that I can't tell you about at the moment. But that's really cool as well. So yeah, it's as I say, an unexpected bonus. It's great to be able to play some cool games as well as run them. Yeah.
Excellent. Now, I got a question here in the chat. Somebody's asked.
Yeah.
So over your years, what are some cool tips you have to keep the investigators on the scent when the dice are on the side of the mythos and they just can't make those spot hidden rolls? How do you keep things on track?
Okay. Well, there's two answers to that. One is about scenario design, and one is about mechanics. The easy one about mechanics is obviously with 7th edition Call of Cthulhu, you know, we were aware that, you know, sometimes things can stall because, you know, the keepers kind of got themselves in a knot. You know, they've kind of gone down an alley with the players, or the players, I should say, the players have led them down an alley that they didn't see coming, and then kind of find themselves caught down this alley and can't really see a way out of. And particularly, you know, the less experienced you are in terms of keeping Call of Cthulhu, the more chance of that happening. Most experienced keepers kind of see it coming and kind of, you know, manage to kind of you know, extricate themselves, but not always. We it happens to all of us at different times. But mechanically, with 7th edition, we introduced a couple of things to try and help that. One was the push mechanic, where you know, if a player fails a roll, they can actually have another attempt if they kind of justify how they're pushing the roll, what further risk they're taking in terms of their character. In that, you know, even if they fail a push roll, all it means is the outcome is decided by the keeper. So the keeper can still actually have them find, you know, if it's a clue, have them find a clue. It's just that the circumstances that they find it in aren't positive. You know, there's a consequence, an unseen consequence for the players and their characters in finding the clue because they fail the push roll. So there's pushing rolls. There's also luck spend, which is an optional rule in Call of Cthulhu 7th edition, where it allows players to burn luck points to adjust their actual skill rolls. So, you know, it kind of gets past that point where, I failed my skill roll by two. I failed my spot hidden by 2 points. Well, I could burn 2 luck and made the roll, and we keep the game moving. And they're very much rules to ensure to not only build tension and mirror the kind of escalation of horror within Call of Cthulhu, but they're also there obviously as well to kind of help streamline things and keep things moving in a reasonable pacey fashion. And so they're kind of mechanics that we introduced to kind of help to address those issues. There's also one other mechanic, I should say, which is the idea roll, which is slightly different to how it used to be in Call of Cthulhu. And that really is where players have got themselves stuck. That, you know, you've tried to help them out as a keeper, you know, you've kind of given them a few hints, but they've just gone in a different direction and they're now stuck and you can't really see a way out of it yourself as a keeper. Well, they can make an idea roll. And whatever happens, whatever the outcome of the idea roll, it's a bit like the push roll, they will get back on track. It just becomes the circumstances of how that happens. If they make a successful idea roll, they get back on track in a kind of a, you know, fairly quick and positive way. If they fail the idea roll, they get back on track, but there's a negative consequence to it. They've kind of got themselves in a little deeper. They may have made their enemies aware of what they're doing or whatever it may be. But those three rules, particularly in 7th edition, address this. But in terms of the design side, it's the rule of three. So as if you're designing a scenario, or even if you're playing one out of a book, particularly an old scenario, where this may be where you might have a clue bottleneck, which effectively is there's a part of the scenario where they need to find this one clue, and this one clue only exists in that one location or with that one person in the scenario. So if they never go there, then they'll never get that clue, and that means they can't actually finish the scenario. Or they go to that place and they fail their roles and they just miss it completely. So the rule of three would say that you should have, if it's that important a clue, you should have it in three places, or the potential to have it in three places. Or design-wise, you make it an obvious clue, which basically means they have to have this clue, so therefore don't make them roll for it. Because if you introduce a roll, there's a risk that they could fail the roll. So you just make it an obvious clue, which means, you know, they walk in and lying on the table is an open book with the clue that they need in it, rather than the book is hidden on the bookshelf. That's an obvious clue as opposed to an obscure clue. So make the clue obvious, or ensure that it can be delivered in possibly, you know, two or three, ideally three different ways. So if they never go to that room, but instead they go and speak to, you know, old man Bill, who lives across the way, he knows a bit of that clue, enough that they will get them back on track. Or if they never see Bill and they go somewhere else, you know, they get the clue in a slightly different format, or they find the book that they need somewhere else as well. There's a copy also over here. So it's just ensuring that you don't have a clue bottleneck. You know, as I say, there's mechanics to help kind of clear that if it ever gets in that situation. And in terms of design, you know, just try and think about, you know, the route the players will take through the scenario, and, you know, just think about how I can place that clue multiple times effectively, you know, because the players will only ever go through a scenario one way. So if they never go to the other places you put the clue as a backup, that doesn't matter, because they will never know about it either. They'll just know that they went, you know, what they consider the right way to get to the end. And so you just got to make sure that, you know, you plan that accordingly, and you have a clue trail. And the rule of three is a good kind of, you know, thing to have in bear in mind when you're putting scenarios together in that way. Does that
hopefully
help a little bit? Yeah,
absolutely. Excellent advice. And I must say, the luck, burning luck in 7th edition, I just love that concept. It works really well in play. It gives people an out, and it adds to that spiral, the downward spiral. As things go on, things get worse, and I just love that. Always ask for a group luck roll near the end.
Yes. It's perfect for that. What it really does is help to mirror that kind of downward spiral, because it mirrors the kind of the dwindling of hit points. It mirrors the dwindling of sanity points, because it reduces your agency as a character. You know, once you start spending those points, your agency starts to diminish as well. And it has that knock-on effect, as you say, that, you know, suddenly when an external factor needs to be decided through a luck roll, you know, you're down on your luck. You're literally down on your luck. And so it plays very well in that kind of horror kind of mystery genre that, you know, everything is against you. Even yourself is against you, because whatever you've done is now being paid back against you, effectively.
Effectively. That's fantastic. I'd like to say again, thank you very much for taking the time. I know it's quite late on a Saturday night for you. I'm sure there are things you would rather be doing. So thank you very much for coming along. Thanks for sharing some of your insights with us. And hopefully we'll see a successful and flourishing Call of Cthulhu and Chaosium moving forward.
Yeah, well, thanks very much, Ian. It's been a pleasure. I presume that most people listening in, you know, already play Call of Cthulhu or have at least an idea. If you don't, please go to chaosium.com, where you can download the quick start rules for Call of Cthulhu for free, and Alone Against the Flames, which is a solo play, which actually teaches you the rules as you play it. If you've never played Call of Cthulhu before and want to know more, then please go and check it out at no cost and just see whether it's the kind of game for you. If you're already playing, then thanks very much, and hopefully I'll see you sometime around a gaming table. But thanks very much. It's been a pleasure.
Certainly look forward to that. Thanks a lot, and have a good
again.
Rest of your evening, and hopefully we'll talk again.
Will do. Thanks, Ian. Thanks, everyone.
User disconnected from your channel.